Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Audio bandwidth for This Week in Tech is provided by Winamp. Subscribe to TWiT and all your favorite podcasts with the ultimate media player. Download it for free at winamp.com. Video bandwidth for TWiT is provided by CacheFly at CacheFly.com. This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 255, recorded July 3rd, 2010. You're holding it wrong. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Carbonite. Backing up the files on your PC or Mac is safe and easy with Carbonite. For a free trial, plus 2 free months with purchase, go to Carbonite.com. Offer code TWIT. And by Audible.com. To download 2 free audiobooks of your choice, go to audible.com/twit2. And don't forget to follow Audible on Twitter at audible_com. And by Ford. And voice-activated Sync, featuring true hands-free calling, turn-by-turn directions, 911 assist, and more. Available exclusively on Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. For more details, visit SyncMyRidePodcast.com. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show that covers your technology news. We bring in brilliant pundits and analysts to talk about something that happened last week. And that's kind of the model for the show. And today we live up to the models. My good friend Steve Gibson is here of the GRC.com, the Gibson Research Corporation. He's the creator of SpinRight. He's our host on Security Now, our weekly podcast on security. And you'll see why Steve's here when I introduce our other guest. Hey, Steve.
Hey, Leo, great to be with you again. And I'm sorry that this week we don't have any gurus and pundits for you.
But, just wish we could only find some.
Couldn't get them on the 4th of July weekend, so you got us instead.
Well, we had a bunch of young people on last week, Kevin Rose, Dan Shapiro. We had a lot of kind of entrepreneurial types. So this week I thought we'd bring out the gray hairs, and I'm really pleased.
To the other side.
Yeah, that we could get Jerry Pournelle back on the show. I love Jerry. Everybody loves Jerry. Jerry's, of course, a very famous sci-fi author. Wrote so many great books like Lucifer's Hammer, and he is also kind of the guy who inspired me to get started in this business with his Chaos Manor columns in Byte Magazine for many years. He continues to write Chaos Manor online and publish it for people who want to read it and subscribe. Is it chaosmanor.com, Jerry?
No, that somebody else got that, and the terms under which they would sell it to me were not acceptable, so it's just it's Chaos Manor Reviews.
Perfect.
But the easy way to find it is just me. If you can spell my name, you can find me generally.
JerryPournelle.com. There it is. The view from Chaos Manor. I thought it'd be fun to have, you know, it's always fun to mix it up a little bit. I thought, and I tried to get another gray hair, John C. Dvorak, on, but he's off for the 4th of July weekend. So it's the three of us. Although, I have another fellow joining us in just a minute. Who's an RF engineer. Our radio frequency is really a black art, and I know you both know quite a bit about it, but I thought we'd get somebody who specializes in this to talk about this iPhone issue. iPhone, of course, the big story of the week, and not so much that it came out. That was last week's story. This week's story is all the brouhaha around the iPhone antenna. And Steve, you wrote a pretty good blog post on this, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, what happened was someone who was following me on Twitter created a video which just very clearly and graphically demonstrated that when he put his finger, just one finger, in one particular spot on the band of his brand new iPhone 4, watching this video, and the whole thing was like 53 seconds long, the YouTube video, you could just see the bars drop down to nothing. And some people had repeated it, other people couldn't. That, you know, they did the same things, and I got feedback when I posted this, and I thought, you know, the explanation for this is that you're seeing 5 bars through a large part of the typical reception power range, so only toward the very end, as as you're nearing the point where the phone can't maintain a connection, can't do data reliably and so forth, only then do you begin to see the bars drop off. And if that were the case, that explained what everybody was seeing. And it turns out, from an engineering standpoint, I guessed right. That turns out to be what is going on.
Apple's defense was, I brought my phone. By the way, I was able to demonstrate this, and I'm demonstrating it right now for people watching on video. I was able to demonstrate it the day we got the iPhone right away. But we were also able to demonstrate it on a Palm Pre. People said the same thing happened with the 3GS. Almost any phone, if held improperly, will cause this problem. Really, the problem is not so much that this is happening, is that Apple's response to this has been pretty anemic.
One of the nice things about being... What is it we are? Old farts or...
gray hairs.
Veterans? Oh, gray hairs. And I'm sure Jerry will relate to this. I was very concerned as an engineer when I started seeing antennas disappearing.
You mean on the phone and physically?
Yes. I mean, there was something very comforting about like pulling the antenna up out of the phone. You know, early cell phones had telescoping antennas. And it was like, okay, now I believe that I really have an antenna. And generation after generation, they just sort of went away.
They disappeared, didn't they?
But they can't go away.
You got to have an antenna. It's a radio.
Yes. It's got to be up there, and it's got to be able to receive a signal.
We're going to address this in two parts. First, we're going to talk about the actual issue, the antenna issue. And then we'll talk about Apple's response, which is really much more of an industry issue than actual.
They were shocked.
Yeah, that was the letter they sent out. And Steve Jobs himself sent out a few notes, and we're going to talk about that. But let's get Spencer Webb on the line. Spencer is a RF engineer. This is his field. He wrote a very cogent blog post at his blog, antennasys.com. Spencer, thanks for joining us on Twit.
My pleasure. Good to be here.
So I know you were interviewed by everybody from PC Magazine to the networks about this post.
Indeed.
Your response was exactly what Steve just said, which is as soon as they took the physical antennas out of the phone, they had to put them somewhere.
Absolutely true. The what Steve was just saying about the history of antennas, especially in cell phones, is correct. They have been pushed down into the housing of the phone and made integral to the little monolith that the phones have become. And it has caused the consumer public to forget that there's actually a radio in there, and the radio needs an antenna. I have a little museum of old cell phones here, and it's pretty graphic how the pull-up antennas, which we loved on the flip phone, I had a Samsung with a pull-up antenna that I wrote a blog post about that worked great, and then we had little stubs and then bumps, and then they were gone.
You said, in fact, that one of the Motorola phones had a pull-up antenna, but they knew... They knew that people weren't going to pull it up, so they put an internal antenna in as well, just in case.
That was the classic flip phone, the Motorola flip phone, the StarTAC.
Yep.
The little bump out on the case had a helical antenna in it, and when you pushed the extended antenna down, there was literally a switch that switched over to the helical antenna, so you still had a real antenna even though you pushed the antenna down. And many people thought that the antenna was a pacifier, and in fact, it wasn't. It was the real thing.
So, is it better to use an external antenna?
It is absolutely better to use an external antenna, and it does a bunch of good things. It gets the point of maximum radiation away from your head. It makes the antenna physically larger, so it can become efficient and broader band, which the RF designer of the transmitter really likes. And they have eliminated it on all the modern phones.
So it's really a design choice, a cosmetic design choice that isn't optimal.
Right. It's purely consumer driven. It's because people don't want to have an antenna. It's just sort of, not cool. And so, unfortunately, the radio waves don't feel the same way. They really want to have an antenna.
Now, Spencer, your reaction was, well, this is life. There's going to be a way you can hold it that's going to kill reception. But don't you think it's particularly bad in the iPhone? I mean, this is in fact, in every Apple ad, this is exactly how the iPhone is held. Is exactly like that.
In fact, if you go look at the pictures of Steve Jobs holding the iPhone at the keynote, in nearly every shot, he's holding it wrong.
He's holding it like you're not supposed to hold it.
Exactly.
Well, he probably had a bumper on it.
Well, that's the question, is why did Apple know about this? And why didn't they do something about it? Is this a necessity?
I think Apple could have solved this problem right at product release by having a sub-1-cent piece of paper in the box that said, that had an international line drawing of a person holding the phone with the correct Vulcan iPhone pinch.
No, but you shouldn't have to hold a phone like that.
But Leo, it has an antenna in it. I think what we need to do is, you know, admit we all need to just say phones have antennas in them, and then if we cover up the antenna, we're going to kill the signal. And it doesn't matter where the antenna is; it just happens to be. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was going to say, didn't they really though exacerbate the problem by externalizing the antenna by like actually giving us electrical contact with the antenna?
That's kind of not normal, right? Normally it's insulated by plastic or something.
Well, we did a test yesterday. One of my engineer friends came over with his brand new shiny iPhone 4. I still don't have mine.
I see you have a 3 there. Yeah.
Yeah. This is not a 3. This is a primordial iPhone.
That's the original. Wow.
That's the original iPhone. It will not die. It keeps working. I love it. But anyway, we had a test with the iPhone 4 here yesterday, and if you bring up my blog page, I posted a very brief blog entry showing some photos of what we did, but we held the phone with the dangling two-hand grip and observed signal strengths during a call. This is an important point. We made a call, and the goal was we were going to try to drop the call. And when we...
This is not the grip that you're recommending, is it? This one here?
No, that grip...
Scott Johnson's
actually,
cartoon.
that grip requires federal certification.
That's from myextralife.com. Let me see. Is this in your first impressions? Oh, here it is.
Yeah, right. There it is. Okay, there's the
two-finger suspension grip, you call this.
There we go.
You shouldn't need a freaking manual on how to hold the phone.
No, you shouldn't. But let's just get through this, and then I'll
okay, all right,
make
all right.
My.
I'll calm down. Spencer.
So it's important. So the two finger dangling grip in my office yielded a 5-bar response during a call, and you could barely see it in that photo. But there it is.
Yep.
And then when we went down to the grip of death, in fact, we didn't just do the grip of death; we did the two handed grip of death.
Oh wow!
And yeah, we almost made it thinner. In that case, we got it down to 1 bar, but we couldn't drop the call. But the important thing is
that's important. But what you just said, and we're going to get back to we couldn't drop the call, because that's I think maybe the important issue. Here I am, I'm holding it in the pleasant accepted whatever it is the two finger Vulcan grip, and it's got 5 bars, and I demonstrate this very clearly. Is this only happening in places with a weak signal though? There's 4 bars.
It depends on how strong the signal is. If you're in an area that's marginal,
just went back up. That's not supposed to happen. Stop it.
Hey.
Why does it fluctuate? It shouldn't go back up, should it?
It wants to make you happy, Leo.
Yeah.
Well, and see, that's I think part of the real controversy here is that by designing the bar formula the way Apple did, the consequence of that is you've got 5 bars almost all of the time until you really have very little signal left.
Right.
Instead of it being, you know, like a 0 to 100 or like, you know, a much more useful scale.
Well, that's what exactly. And let's go to Apple's letter, which they sent out. You know, Apple's response to this has been kind of weak, and we're going to talk more about this. First, Steve Jobs says, hold it different. My friend Chris DeBona said, no, that's nice. Apple's philosophy went from think different to hold it different. Credit Chris DeBona on that one.
The problem is that you actually relied on that indicator.
Right.
And that turns out to be totally only loosely coupled to the actual signal strength and perhaps not coupled at all.
Well, that's what Apple says. Apple said, we have discovered the cause of this. This is a direct quote from Apple's press release.
So live with it. If you get connection than you had bars. If you, the notion of bars is a little odd in digital phones anyway, isn't it?
Well, that's a good question, Spencer. Is that does that make sense to have bars? Is that an analog leftover?
Well, it's a human factors problem. People want to see a number. They want to see an indicator. They want to have a feeling for signal strength. And the fact of the matter is,
it's a binary situation. You've either got enough connection to be able to make a call, or you don't.
It works or it don't.
Worse quality or better quality as you did in analog days.
Well, and when I went in to complain to the AT&T folks, and Apple's even said this, I've heard to other people, they said, AT&T said, okay, the bars, but are you dropping more calls? And I said, well, I hardly use a phone at all. And no, apparently I'm not. In fact, I tried after I went home and I said, well, let me see. And I was able to get it down to zero and the call still didn't drop. So maybe it doesn't affect the call.
Leo, we don't know what the bars mean. The bars are a relative indicator, okay? Nobody knows what the bars mean, but they like the bars.
Apparently, so even Apple. Apple said, upon investigation, we were stunned to find that the formula we use to calculate how many bars of signal strength to display is totally wrong. Our formula
what
in
does
many...
What wrong mean?
Well, look, you know what they did. Yep. They made sure that they showed five bars all the time.
Yep.
In previous phones. Our formula in many instances mistakenly displays two or more bars than it should for given signal strength. I'm shocked that gambling is occurring. For example, we sometimes display four bars when we should be displaying as few as two bars. Users observing a drop of several bars when they grip their iPhone in a certain way are most likely in an area with very weak signal strength, but they don't know it because we're erroneously displaying four or five bars. It's like they're saying, well, we kind of fudged it before. Is that true,
probably.
Spencer? Or go ahead.
Well, I think the fact that AT&T has a standard for the signal strength and Apple wants to adhere to the standard, that's a wonderful thing. But it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't change the performance of the phone. It doesn't change the number of dropped calls people are going to get. They had to make a response. This is the response they made. I don't think it has any particular validity. I also think that the measure of whether the system's working well or not is whether you drop calls or not. And that really, you know, has nothing to do with what the bars mean. But the marketing guys won't take the bars off the phone because everybody expects them.
The one other sort of really interesting, you know, sort of conspiracy theory side also is that with the release of iOS 4, they removed the field service screen. You could enter a really bizarre phone number.
You can't do it anymore.
And you could see like a screen of true data that meant something, and that disappeared. It's like, why? Everyone liked that, except maybe
the
Apple
smartest
marketing.
The smartest thing Apple could do is quietly put the field service screen back in the iPhone 4 and just leak the information and not officially acknowledge it. And I think people will start making measurements. And I honestly believe they'll find that the iPhone 4 is a more sensitive radio than the previous models. And getting back to something Leo said, is the iPhone 4 more sensitive to having the human hand interfere with the antenna? And I think the answer is, yes, because they've moved the antenna action from the back of the phone to the side of the phone.
Right. And you know, really, it's a beautiful piece of design, but you need to give it a case. Put it in a case. If it's a little rubber band around the antenna, that's fine, or whatever. Well, but then you really solve the problem.
Yeah, and that's what I did. I got a case for the thing, and you're right. It doesn't happen anymore. I have to take the case off to do it. Don't you think, I mean, as long as we're talking conspiracy, that's a little suspicious that the Apple releases the first case it's ever done, and it's this weird bumper case that doesn't
And it's $30.
And it's $30 for a piece of rubber that, just by coincidence, happens to insulate the metal band and nothing else. Apple must have known. Jerry, we cut you off. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. I find it all amusing because I think the whole thing is to protect AT&T from people finding out that their service sucks.
Nobody's paying attention to AT&T at this point, are they?
No. I mean, look, I used to have, back when bars meant something and I had a different kind of phone, I used to have four bars here, but that was when my wireless service was from a thing called Singular. And then AT&T bought it. And what do you know? Half my house, I don't get any at all. And even up here, I have to stick my head out the window to get cell phone service in my house. So if I like Apple stuff, I'm kind of stuck with lousy service. I wonder how long Apple will continue to do that, because I suspect I'm not the only one who has that problem.
Rumors abound. Of course, these rumors have been going on for ever since the iPhone came out, that Verizon, and this is now coming from good sources like Bloomberg.
Yeah.
The Verizon will have this phone in January.
Yay.
But then we'll lose that one nice feature of the phone, which is that you can surf while you're on the phone. So we'll be good, because we'll be on CDMA, not GSM. So there's a very good article. I don't know if you saw it, Spencer, on Anand Tech. In which
yes, they did.
Yeah, it looked like they did a very good analysis of the antenna. This is the actual physical antenna that's in there.
Yeah, that was one of the slides at the keynote that Apple showed.
Apple at the keynote was very proud about how good this antenna was.
They were. And one of the questions I got asked during the last couple of weeks is, do I think that the disguise cases that they had the company phones in for evaluation might have hidden the severity of the problem? And I thought about that, and it's very possible that that could have been true. However, the thought that Apple didn't have a clue that the hand interference was going to be an antenna issue is preposterous. They had to not only know about it, I'm sure they quantified it, and they took a risk and decided that it was worthy of it, and they shipped it like that. I still think the little piece of paper in the box would have solved the whole problem.
I wonder if the whole deal with Apple and the iPhone and the signal strength and the deal with AT&T even is a consequence of the fact that maybe they're in the shadow of a huge AT&T cell tower, and no one ever realized that. You know, at Apple, you get really good AT&T performance.
Which is true, by the way.
And nowhere else.
Yeah, Apple has unusually good signal.
You mean there is a place where you get good AT&T service?
Yeah, it's called One Infinity Loop, Cupertino, California, 95014.
So I have to move to Cupertino to be able to get decent cell phone service.
Well, I don't know. Maybe it's a coincidence, but I wouldn't be surprised if AT&T's executive said, make sure that Steve gets a good signal. But it does make it hard to test, doesn't it? So Anand's conclusion, in fact, they have a chart, which must make it true.
It's a nice chart, by the way.
Nice chart.
Yeah.
Signal attenuation comparison in dB, lower is better. And you can see that the attenuation goes from holding it naturally inside a case of 7.2 dB to 24 dB if you cup it tightly, much more than you see on the 3GS or the Nexus One. I don't know about their methodology. Spencer, does this make sense, though, to you as an RF engineer?
I think the most impressive thing that Anand Tech did was hack the phone so that they can get dBm numbers out of the receiver.
Yeah, that's amazing, isn't it?
They did a wonderful job doing that.
And they actually have numbers here on the bar.
Yeah, they hacked it and reverse engineered it to find out what the numbers meant. Of course, that's all going to change as soon as Apple releases the patch.
Right.
But what they did was pretty good with the tools they had. I was actually reasonably impressed. One of the things that we have to keep in mind is that when the phone is being observed and tested, regardless of what change you're trying to make to observe if it's better or worse, you don't know if you're sitting on one cell site or you're switching between three different cell sites as conditions change. And there is nothing on the phone save that service screen that will tell you that.
Right.
So all of the tests, 100% of the tests that have been published, including my own, if you can't be certain that you haven't switched cells, then you don't know if your data is valid.
Oh, that's very good. So you can't move around, but you could even switch cells while you're sitting still?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, if you're covered by two cells, and how you hold the phone or even where in your house you're standing, it might change the directionality of which side of your house the signal's squirting out, and you could be switching back and forth between cells and not know it. And that's the beauty of the cellular system, but that's also what obfuscates the ability to make any observations. I think Apple should re-enable the field service screen and let us nerds play.
I wonder why they turned it off. That's highly suspicious. Isn't it?
Probably all it did was cause them problems. The word got out, the screen was there, and, you know, users are going to complain. They're going to say, hey, wait a minute, you know, it's like too much information, and Apple would just rather we had five bars.
They'd rather we read the press release and just, you know, listened to them. And
we're sorry that they were shocked.
And hold it different.
I keep coming back to wondering what's the difference between one bar and five bars.
Apparently none.
Four, actually, Jerry.
Steve, we know you can do arithmetic. Spencer, what is it? It's a logarithmic scale, isn't it?
Apparently, the Anantech chart, if you could put it up, shows a dBm on the bottom. And for those of you that don't know what a dB is, if a 10 dB change is 10x in the signal, 10 times, a 3 dB change is 2 times. So that chart actually makes the bars useful and lets you make some evaluations.
But, well, it can make some evaluations, but what is your different expectation? If I have one bar or I have four bars, what should I expect to see differently when I'm actually using the cell phone?
Yeah, so Jerry asked the question, and this is why Chaos Manor was such a great column. You're a user. You asked the legitimate question the user should ask. How does it affect me?
Am I going to get better data transmission? Are you going to sound better if I have four bars than if I have one? My understanding is that bits is bits.
Bits is bits. And when you hit a bit error rate or a BER that is below what is acceptable to the system, you fall off a cliff. So I have to agree with you 100% that you either have it or you don't have it.
In which case, why shouldn't it have a light bulb that says yes or no?
Yeah, good or bad. Yeah, it's binary, isn't it?
I think in this august group, we've already made the argument that it should both have a light bulb that's green or red, and that it should have a bit error rate readout on some screen that you can only get to if you're a certified nerd.
It needs an analog meter with ballistics so we can really see what's going on.
And to Jerry's point, when you think about it, really, the question, can you hear me now? That's binary.
Right.
Yeah, that's the binary question. If you're going to have a nerd screen, it probably ought to also use some kind of location system to point to where the signal is coming from so that you know which tower it is.
Is it, Spencer, a warning that I might get a dropped call because my bars are plummeting?
Yeah, and you know, that it is a warning, and I think if we grow an ear inside of our ear canal, I mean an eye inside of our ear canal, so we can watch the bars.
Exactly. Too bad we can't see them at the same time.
Yeah. And then it becomes really useful. I think we should work on that. A little genetic engineering, we'll have it solved.
Well, you can have a tone. You can have an audible tone.
Could I opt out of that?
You don't want that? No ears in your, no eyes in your ears, Jerry?
I don't think I need that.
Okay.
The maintenance sounds expensive.
This is great stuff. Spencer, I said I'd only take 15 minutes. I know you've got a lawn to mow or something.
I'm good as long as you need me.
Well, stick around if you'd like. You can continue with the discussion. I mean, this is such a great conversation, and we rarely actually have anybody with any technical standing on the show, so it's kind of nice to have somebody who knows what they're talking about, and I got three people who know what they're talking about. Jerry Pournelle. The legend, the myth. It's so great to have you here.
The myth.
No, that's
mythical.
The mythical Jerry Pournelle. He's like a unicorn. So it's so nice to have you. Steve Gibson from GRC.com and, of course, from AntennaSys.com. Spencer Webb, who is an actual RF engineer, which is mythical like a unicorn. RF is a black art as far as I'm concerned. You've designed cell towers, right?
You know, I used to argue. No, I design antennas.
Antennas. Okay.
And most of the antennas that I design, the majority would fit in a bread box. And then there are some that get pretty big. But I'm an antenna designer. I have done RF design, but that's not my specialty. If it radiates, that's what I make.
Okay. Spencer, you probably heard that Apple is hiring antenna engineers now, right?
Desperately. Quickly.
I wonder if Steve, there's a coincidence.
Steve, you're the 57th person to remind me of that. And every person that reminds me of that, I tell them the same thing, and that is Apple knows how to find my phone number.
Yeah, they do now. We're going to take a break, come back. If you guys want to take a break, please do. We got a minute, but I want to talk a little bit about my friends at Ford and the fabulous Ford Sync that's in my Mustang and many Ford, Lincoln, and Mercury vehicles. It is the best hands-free out there, bar none. I mean, I can just say that absolutely without equivocation. You've got true hands-free calling. And by the way, I tried it. It works fine with iPhone. Works great with Android. Android, by the way, is an example of a phone that in many cases does not have hands-free because it wasn't built into the Android operating system. Doesn't stop the sync. When you pair it up on the Bluetooth, it downloads the phone book, and I can now call for anybody by name. I press the button on my steering. I don't have to take my eyes off the road, my hands off the wheel. I press the button on the steering wheel. I say phone, and I can call anybody from my Android phone, my iPhone. I can even have multiple phones in the car. I just love that. Turn-by-turn directions, too. You don't have to have the big display. It'll talk you through your route. And if there are traffic problems ahead, it will reroute you automatically. It's got 911 assist, which is very nice. I hope I never have to use it. It's a feature you don't want to have to use. If the airbags are deployed at any time in your car, it will call 911 from your phone. It'll automatically send your GPS coordinates from your phone. Or actually, it has its own GPS, so it's not from the phone, but through the phone. And play a pre-recorded message and then give you a chance to talk as well. So a great feature should the worst happen. I use it for music all the time. I have to say I love the Ford Sync, and I have tried many others, but there is none better. You can take a look at, of course, Sync at your favorite Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury dealer. It's a standard in some Ford, Lincoln, or Mercury models, optional in others. Or go to the website syncmyridepodcast.com, and they have videos and so forth you can see. I can get sports scores. I can get movie listings. This is fun. You can say, where's the cheapest gas? And it'll steer you there. Sync. Are you nodding because you have one or just because you want one? It's great, isn't it? Yeah. SyncMyRidePodcast.com. We love Ford and we thank it. By the way, we're going to be going to Dearborn, Michigan at the end of this month to cover Maker Faire, which is in Detroit for the first time, Detroit area for the first time, which will be a lot of fun. And we are also getting, I am told, an exclusive tour with our cameras live of the Ford assembly plant in Dearborn. So that I'm really excited about because talk about high tech. This stuff is really advanced in so many interesting ways. That's coming up at the end of the month. We'll see that on Twit Live. Back to our conversation. Jerry Pournelle is here as well as Steve Gibson and Spencer Webb. We're talking. Spencer, is your name really Webb or did you make that up just for the... for the website?
I'm not at liberty to say.
It's a great name. Apple says in their PR release, to fix this bar problem, we are adopting AT&T's recently recommended formula for calculating how many bars display for a given signal strength. The real, and this is important, the real signal strength remains the same, but the bars will report it far more accurately, providing users a much better indication of the reception they'll get in a given area. We're also making, and this is the real fix, we're making bars 1, 2, and 3 a little taller so they'll be easier to see. They're going to make them bigger so you think you've got a better signal. This is in a free software update. What do you think, Spencer, the chances are that Apple will also slipstream without any notice maybe a little rubber thing on the, I mean, couldn't they easily just coat it with something or do something to insulate a little bit better?
I think they would have, any change they would have made to improve antenna performance would have made the product bigger. And I think that's the important key. There are a lot of pressures on the design of this product, and the antenna performance is only one of them. The industrial designers, the artists, have a lot of say at Apple, probably more than other companies. The mechanical engineers have something to say. The battery engineer wants more battery volume. They're all competing for this volume in the phone. And I'm sure that there was a meeting, you know, in some dungeon at Apple where somebody innocently said, well, can't you use the band on the phone as an antenna? And the antenna guy said, well, I probably could. And that was the end of that. He lost any volume inside the phone. Yeah.
It would have been a mistake.
And don't you just hate it when art gets upset by physics? You know, the immutable laws of physics. Sorry, art guys, but you're just not going to have what you want.
Well, and this is the sad irony of it is that, well, so now I have this, what is truly a work of art. The iPhone 4 really is gorgeous. I have it in a case because it's the only way I can keep those bars from going down. And I think that's probably going to be the solution. And maybe at some point Apple PR will say, all right, give anybody who complains a free bumper. How much can it cost them to make? I know they sell it for $30, but seriously, it's a piece of rubber. We tried a LiveStrong bracelet. Those rubber band bracelets that you know, you get from Lance Armstrong's foundation, LiveStrong, they work fine. Anything to insulate would work fine. It's a piece of scotch tape.
If you go to my blog, I wrote a little bit on why the thicker the bumper, the more it pushes your lossy hand away from the phone, and it's going to reduce the sensitivity to your hand. And I am not so sure that Apple hadn't considered this from the beginning. Obviously, the evidence is that they came out with the bumpers so quickly.
Right.
But
you used electrical tape, and did that work?
I used electrical tape. In fact, here is the actual roll of electrical tape. This is exclusive to This Week in Technology.
I thought electrical tape was black.
No, antenna engineers are permitted to buy white electrical tape.
Oh, you have to have a license.
You do. You have to show it at the Home Depot. So we used white electrical tape. This is serious.
Stop laughing.
We did the insulation, and we did the grip of death, and it had absolutely no change on our experiment. Now, I have to admit, it wasn't a rigorous experiment. It wasn't a very carefully controlled experiment, but it was enough of an experiment for two RF guys sitting next to each other to look at each other and say, yep, okay, no change, no difference.
So it's not that the moisture in my hand or I'm somehow bridging this plastic gap. That's a misnomer. That's not what's happening.
That's DC think. That's light bulbs and flashlights think. We're dealing with radio frequency currents that are switching back and forth at, in this case, about a billion times a second. RF acts differently. And if we take a thin insulator and put it over that band, the RF actually doesn't know the difference because we're making so much capacitance with our hand. So it's not really what we would call a galvanic connection that's causing the problem. It has nothing to do with that. It is a combination of detuning the antenna from putting our hand there and literally attenuating the signal as it's coming off the antenna, which means it's turning into heat inside of our hands.
So the farther away the bag of moisture that is your body is from this part of the phone, the better.
Yep.
To a certain point, obviously, if you're 6 inches away.
But it only takes one thin piece of tape to do that. Is that correct?
No, it doesn't, it sounds like.
No, you need to, the bumper case pushes your hand. I don't have a bumper case in front of me, but I have the case I use on my primordial.
Okay, I misunderstood you, and I suspect if I did, some others did.
Yeah,
as
no,
well.
Thanks for clarifying.
You're saying that a piece of tape won't do it. You have to have something that has a physical difference to actually affect the capacitance of the connection between your hand and the antenna.
Yeah, I predicted that a thin piece of tape will have no effect. We observed that a piece of electrical tape didn't seem to have an effect. Okay. And next week, I'm going to get much more detailed in the measurements.
Of course, if you use something other than white tape.
People have reported scotch tape works, but it sounds like that wouldn't.
I think plastic tongs, maybe that would be a good thing.
The Vulcan grip of death. We've already established, Spencer told us, is you have to hold the phone with two fingers like that.
Three fingers. One on the top back.
Okay.
All right. And then one on each side.
Like that.
And that's right.
Is it necessary to extend one's pinky, or is that just a finesse?
Only in polite company.
Hold it like a teacup.
That's right. Absolutely. It's a shame to cover up this work of art with a case, but you know, when I bought the primordial iPhone, it had a case on it before I left the Apple store, and it looks great now, and it's been dropped, and it's still working awesomely.
Just every once in a while, I take it out, I polish it up. I look at it. I go, ooh, ah. So let me ask you. So, Spencer, you are an iPhone user.
I am.
Will you get an iPhone 4?
Not only will I get one, I'm wondering where it is. Actually, it should be delivered here on Tuesday.
Awesome.
So, yes. And right. And I have to make a confession. I've said that I'm getting one. It's absolutely not true. I'm getting two. My wife is getting one, and I've told her that she's getting one, and I've told her that she'll like it.
There you
so,
go.
So she has reluctantly agreed to give up her Motorola Razr, which, by the way, jeez, strangely enough, I did a little research, and the Motorola Razr has the antenna right on the bottom.
On that bump. Just, right where the
fan
would
so
be.
If we do the grip of death on the Motorola Razr, guess what's going to happen? The exact same thing.
Steve, you're an iPhone user or no?
Nope, because I'm like Jerry. I feel the same way about AT&T. The only account I have with them is the iPad because I had no choice. They, you know, that was good enough to drag me over there. And I'm a BlackBerry user also.
And Jerry, what do you use for a phone?
I use an iPhone. Long ago when they first came out, one of my readers said, hey, this is the pocket computer from your old novel, The Mote in God's
it
Eye.
It is, isn't it?
And you ought to have one. And next thing you know, one appeared in the mail. So this one, because I've still got the ancient one.
Yeah, you and Spencer. Last two.
It works. It works fine. I don't, like you, I don't do much talking on the telephone, but I also don't tweet. So it works just fine for a phone, and it's very good for looking up things when I'm getting online, and I Google more with my iPhone than I do with anything else.
Maybe you should have a Google phone.
Well, actually, what I really want is a stylish carry bag for my iPad.
I was going to say the iPad has probably replaced Jerry's use of the iPhone because it's just so right.
That's exactly correct. I use the iPad when I have it with me for almost everything. I would now, except that my iPad just did something goofy. While I've got you experts on the line, can I ask some advice?
Go right ahead.
Okay. My iPad connected to my network, but it would not use it. That is, it kept saying that it couldn't get email or Safari. You sent me an email, and I forwarded it on to my Mac account so I could be looking at that at the same time I'm looking at this, which didn't work, although it appeared on the MacBook Pro I'm using. So I thought, that's very interesting. The iPad, which was working fine down at the beach with a different network, seems to believe it's connected to my internal network here, my Wi-Fi here, but it isn't. So I pushed the button, the two buttons, which makes it do a hard reset, and it came up and it worked fine. And now I've got it connects to the internet just fine. It believes it's connected to my local internal network, but when I turn it, it no longer reorients itself. It's now locked into...
Well, you know about the switch at the top, Jerry, the lock
switch. I'll bet you that's what it is.
Unlock that switch.
There's a switch at the top, and I hit it wrong.
So it's easy to hit that. Hey, but let me ask. This is actually germane because Apple has had problems with the Wi-Fi on the iPad, problems which they've denied and then said, well, you know, Princeton University said, well, it's a DNS, it's doing DNS wrong. It's
yep,
not
that was it. That was the switch,
good.
And I had inadvertently hit it, and I'd forgotten about it, which tells you the problem with being 80 years old if you forget there's a switch at the top.
But there is something still not right, Leo. Remember, this is my second 3G iPad, because the first one was locking up all the time, and I remember mentioning to you that at the time I was switching back and forth actively between the Wi-Fi and cellular, sort of depending upon where I was. Well, I've just left everything in cellular mode because I'm grandfathered in, thank goodness, to the unlimited account.
By the way, AT&T. Never let that lapse, because I'm told that if you let that lapse once, you never again get unlimited.
I've got one, and I guess I'll never let mine lapse. AT&T swears to heaven that they're going to put a new tower in our neighborhood shortly.
Well, if any,
well, that's good because you'll get a tan that way too. So. Anyway, when I do mess with the turning on and off the LAN, the Wi-Fi, every so often the pad locks up and I've got to do Jerry's two finger salute in order to get the thing going again. I mean, so something's not right somewhere.
Yeah, Steve, when it locks up, do you mean it stops working or it just simply believes it's connected to Wi-Fi, but it's not really connected to the net?
I've seen both behaviors, a complete freeze of the UI, just that it never recovers from, or sometimes it's got problems. I found that for my particular email servers, the UI on the iPad didn't give me enough flexibility for configuring it. I had to set up the email on my Mac and then dock the iPad in order for the Mac that had more sophisticated email UI to then synchronize into the iPad. Then it was able to work with my email.
Okay. Mine was connected to the Wi-Fi, but it really wasn't, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
It gave all the indications. The settings said so. I went into settings and turned Wi-Fi off and then back on again. No effect. But when I did that hard reset, it reset itself, connected to my internal Chaos Manor Wi-Fi network, and it's working just fine, which is great. I was horrified because I never had a real problem with it before.
When I first got the iPhone, I had a similar issue. It would get on the Wi-Fi, and after a while, it would simply act like it wasn't connected to the Wi-Fi, but it was. And I had to turn Wi-Fi off on the iPhone, turn Wi-Fi back on the iPhone, and everything worked okay. And I exchanged iPhones, and that didn't cure the problem. And then finally, I took my blue Linksys wireless access point. I think it was a WAP54G, if I'm remembering correctly. And I took it offline, and I went and I got an Apple AirPort Extreme, and the problem went away.
Yeah, that now, generally works, but I use D-Link and Belkin here, and they both work very well. I'm very fond of those two companies for that sort of thing. But this was interesting, but I thought it was a tragedy because I'm getting kind of dependent on this iPad. I think that's the big news of the week is that the there's this huge race for making ebooks and textbooks and magazines and everything wireless cheap now. Readers are there's that price war on readers.
Well, that's interesting, and I wonder how much of that is in response to the iPad. How much is it that the Barnes and Noble is eating some of Amazon's business? As you know, Barnes and Noble dropped the price on. Borders dropped the price on their Nook. No, that's B&N, right?
B&N is Nook.
That's the Nook.
And
they dropped
the
that
Nook
price
was
down.
The first one to cut, and immediately Amazon retaliated, and then the last I heard, B&N is. I mean, you know that war isn't over.
So they dropped the Nook to $150 for Wi-Fi only, $189 for Wi-Fi plus 3G, and then Amazon responded, dropping the Kindle price similarly. This happened a couple of weeks ago. Yes. And now Amazon's announced a new Kindle DX, which has an improved e-ink screen. And you said, Steve, you've already ordered that one.
The moment I found out about it, I got my order in.
You didn't like the DX, or did you? Was it too big for you?
No, I use it every day. It's the reason I upgraded to this latest one. I've got it rubber banded to the head of my stair climber, and I read science fiction on it when I'm stair climbing.
But you're going to like it better than the iPad, you think?
No. What I'm finding is that there's still nothing better than the Kindle for just reading. It's lightweight. The battery lasts forever. Unless you're in the dark, then you're not going to be able to read very much. But, you know, it's as a purpose-specific just ebook reader, I really like it better than the iPad because I've gotten used to the smaller screen. And it's easy to hold it in one hand. You really can't hold the iPad in one hand. It's too heavy to hold it for a long time.
I suspect your eyes are better than mine. What I really like about the iPad is reading Kindle books on the iPad.
Well, that's the beauty of it.
That little slide bar at the bottom. and you can thumb through pages very rapidly.
Right.
And that's what's going to cause, and that feature is the difference between whether you can have textbooks on electronic books or not. You will never have
color.
Textbooks on a Kindle as long as you don't have some faster way to flip through the pages, which you can do so easily on the iPad. That was genius on their part to have done that. So they got better. The iPad app on the Kindle, the Kindle app on the iPad is better for reading Kindle books than the Kindle itself.
Yes.
Well, and they put it on the iPhone, and they've added audio and video to the iPad and iPhone, and they've also put it now on the Android phone. I was told, and I don't know how true this is, that there's two different divisions at Amazon, one selling the hardware and one pushing the software. Because I could never understand why, is Amazon in the book business? If they are, put Kindle everywhere, right? You don't care about
hardware. They're in the razor blade business.
Yeah. Yeah, they just want to sell the books, right?
They want you to have something to read it with, which is why they didn't resist having Kindle apps on iPads.
But why do they still make a Kindle then if they've got a platform now? They don't need to make the Kindle anymore.
How long do you think they will?
Well, I don't know. They just announced a new one on July 1st.
Gillette still makes razors too, I guess.
they're making a big deal about the new Kindle DX, 50% improved contrast. They say this may be a first step towards a color Kindle.
Yeah, well, a color Kindle with an easy to thumb. Look, there is an enormous potential in this business in textbooks. College and high school textbooks are so doggone expensive that if you can do them with e-books, it's a lot cheaper for the schools. And over time, it'll be cheaper for everybody. But you're not going to do it unless you can thumb back and you can do bookmarking and thumb back and forth between those pages much more rapidly than you can with a Kindle right now.
The other interesting thing that Amazon introduced with the Kindle, I'm not so sure how I feel about it, but they've added sort of a social networking aspect to it where you're reading a Kindle book and you're seeing highlights that other people who read the same book made before you came along.
That's kind of weird.
Yeah, you can, and I have been very careful to ignore all that.
Can
really
you turn it off?
Or
you don't have to see it.
Yeah, you can turn it off.
Yeah.
Well, if I knew it was Steve Gibson or Leo Laporte's comments, I would probably leave them on. But since they are more likely to be those of somebody who has picked up the book in a bookstore, who do I know? I mean, there are more. Let us face it. I think everybody on this program has more social contacts than we need right now.
Yeah.
Well, in this case, Jerry, you definitely, I just want to advise you, stay away from Twitter. This is not where you want to go.
Steve.
I have never tweeted in my life, and I am sorry to say, I am proud of you that you are the leading twit in this world, but I have never even been vaguely tempted to find out when you were having lunch.
Well, watch out, Jerry, because Steve felt like that a year ago, and now Steve's got three Twitter accounts.
Really?
He can't stop.
Gibson, are you now a twit? I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah. He's got SGRC. What is it, Steve? What are the three?
I have Gibson Research for corporate stuff. I have SGGRC for my daily stuff that occurs to me, and SGPad. And what I'm finding is I've got, I don't know, like 11,200 some followers. And, I'm deep into what's going.
Well, it takes a while. You got to build up.
And so I'm following along what's happening with the industry. But, for example, last Saturday when I realized what was going on with the iPhone, just based on sort of other people's experimental results, because I don't have one, I created a blog posting, and then I was able to announce it on the Twitter, and a lot of people found out about that way. So for me, it's just a great communication medium. And for example, earlier this morning, I said, "Hey, Leo and you and I are going to be on Twit at 2:15 p.m. Pacific," and I got a ton of feedback from people who are really happy to find out about that.
And I'm sure a lot more people are watching because of it.
I'm sure that's the case, and I guess that's true, but Can't you do it just by announcing it on blogs?
Twitter pushes it out as opposed to a blog where people have to go to your blog to see it.
No, they don't.
Well, they don't.
The ones who have subscribed to feeds don't.
Yeah, and you know what's happened, Jerry? I think fewer and fewer people use feed readers and read feeds. That's become, I think, a little less popular thanks to Twitter, where you get these little short bursts. Twitter, if you craft your list carefully, becomes kind of like a feed reader that's put together by other people. And this gets back to this idea that Amazon's having, which I think is very interesting, of including others' annotations in your book. And you hit the nail on the head, Jerry. If you could pick whose annotations you were looking at, wouldn't that be valuable? That's kind of what Twitter does.
Yeah, I suppose. You have probably talked me into looking at it, and that's horrifying because but my notion of Twitter up to now has largely been the only tweet I ever saw was somebody was telling me he was about to have a sandwich and then go to the toilet.
Yeah, you don't need that.
Why was it that I wanted to know this?
Well, you don't follow that guy. You follow people like Steve who say interesting things.
And the fact is, Jerry, celebrities of various walks of life get a lot of followers, and you'll be able to share things that you care about, you know, like little short bursts about a book you found or a movie review or a restaurant that you liked. And
that's what I do on my day book now. I mean, I invented the blog, for heaven's sake. Back in 6 days.
Stick with the blog. It's okay.
I have a pretty good claim to have been the first blogger. And I don't know that I want to abandon blogs to tweets.
No, don't, Jerry.
And how many people are reading the blog? Do you have a sense for subscriber number?
I know how many paid subscribers I have. I know the usual ratio, and I know how many uniques I get, which is in the order of 100,000 a month.
So are you happy with the success of the View from Chaos Manor? Has it gone well for you?
Well, I'm not getting any $20,000 a month out of it, the way I heard you say on the radio you were doing.
That's donations, Jerry. Those people are contributing to the cause.
Yeah, and it's because you don't have a Twitter account, Jerry. That's entirely
contributing to what? Contributing? I mean, is that just gifts to you?
What
the cause was?
We did this a while ago. You know, when we first started Twit, it was all supported by donations because we didn't have any advertisers. The plan after a few months of this was, I should get some advertisers because I'm not going to be able to live off what people donate. And we now have a fairly good stable of advertisers, very high quality advertisers. And I realized, well, why are people donating? It doesn't make sense to have donations and advertisement. But I still want to encourage donations because what it really is a buy-in. It's a way, we're only asking $2 a month, a way of saying I'm part of this, I support it, I like it. And it's a way of feedback too. So I thought, well, here's what I'll do. I won't take a salary out of Twit. We got enough people taking money out of Twit, including 10 employees now and about 30 or 40 contractors. They'll be funded by the advertising, but I'll take my salary out of donations so that when you donate something, it really has a direct result. And that's worked out pretty well. And it went up to about $20,000 a month when I started doing that. I don't take all that money, Jerry, because I take 10 out.
But I don't provide, I don't, let's say my subscribers feel satisfied, I guess, because I have
they're
one
supporting
of the highest
you.
Renewal rates.
Yeah, they're supporting you, and I think that's a really worthy thing.
But it's not my full-time job. I'm still a fiction writer, and I don't have time to supervise employees to come up with the kind of content that would justify taking that kind of money out of it.
Well, exactly. And so
I just don't put that much in it. Back in the Byte days, I had 30 editors working with and some of them for me back in New Hampshire, and I could go to all of the conferences and keep up to date and have somebody, I want you to follow this for me and let me know if something interesting happens. Now it's all informal, but you know, I think I have the most interesting mailbag on the web.
And you publish this, by the way.
Yeah, I have my mail on the web as part of the Jerry Purnell thing.
I think that's a great idea.
I also have a mailbag in Chaos Manners Review. Chaos Manners Review is not political. It is purely technology, and it's the old Byte column and its comments.
Right.
My website, that one, the one you're showing in the background now, that website is whatever I think of, but I think of it as my technology and civilization seminar. That back, Richard Feynman was getting me on to the faculty at Caltech to do a senior seminar on technology and civilization.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen that.
And this is basically what I do on that, and that's what people are subscribing to.
Oh, I didn't know that. I thought they were subscribing to Chaos Manor. So it's jerrypornell.com.
They get them both.
You get them
both. The same subscription is to both. I don't try to distinguish, and I don't have any ads.
I we're going to do an ad because we got to make some money here, but I do want to talk about leaky capacitors. And and this is, you know, we were talking about Apple's problems. Well, Dell's got some big problems they're facing, including some lawsuits over these leaky capacitors. And I want to get your take on that in just a second, if I might. Before we do, though, I do want to talk a little bit about Carbonite.com. Yes, another one of our great sponsors. They've been with us for a long time. In fact, I'm putting Carbonite, I mentioned this, on my daughter's laptop. I just put it on yesterday. She's got a Mac. Carbonite works on a PC or Mac. She's going off to college this fall, and I can tell you right now, I know I'm going to get the call at some point where she says, Daddy, I lost my paper or the laptop or the hard drive died and all my data, too. And I'm going to say, I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to say, don't worry, dear. You've got Carbonite. Carbonite, the leader in online backup. We all know that computer disasters happen. Hard drives fail. Steve's made a living on failing hard drives. Laptops get stolen right and left. Carbonite is the way to back up. It's automatic. As soon as you put Carbonite on your system, in fact, you go right now to Carbonite.com, use the offer code TWIT. You can put it on and try it for 2 weeks free. You'll see it starts backing up to the internet, encrypted, 128-bit SSL, and if you want, optional AES 256-bit encryption, so it's absolutely private. Your personal files are backed up to the net where they're safe and sound. In fact, they can be accessed anywhere you can get online with just a couple of clicks, including an iPhone or a BlackBerry. So if you back it up with Carbonite.com, you're never going to lose that data. PC or Mac, $55 a year, less than 15 cents a day. And it's everything on your internal hard drive, all your personal files. Carbonite.com, use the offer code TWIT to try it free for 2 weeks. If you decide to buy, you'll get it free for 2 months with the offer code TWIT. No credit card needed for this free trial either. It's just absolutely free and open. Carbonite.com, offer code TWIT. Just do me a favor, try it. I know you're going to like it. So, Dell, this is an article in the New York Times, came out a couple of days ago. After the math department at the University of Texas noticed some of its Dell computers failing, Dell examined the machines. The company came up with an unusual reason for the computer's demise. The school had overtaxed the machines by making them perform difficult math calculations. Not so. That's just their excuse. It turns out Dell knew. It's being sued right now. The lawsuit is in process. Dell knew at the time that they had faulty electrical components. They sold millions of computers with bad capacitors from 2003 to 2005. Dell, more than any other, HP and Apple, had the same problem. These capacitors were used widely. But Dell had a huge number of problems with these computers. And unfortunately, even though they knew what was going on, they decided to, basically, sounds like lie about what was going on. Now they're admitting it. These bad capacitors popped, leaked fluid, caused crashes. And the documents that were recently unsealed in the case against Dell in the federal district court in North Carolina show that Dell had far more of a problem than others. 11.8 million computers in those 2 years that had the faulty capacitors from a company.
We had one of them.
Did you?
Are these on the motherboard or in the power supply?
I don't know.
On the motherboard. They're on the motherboard. And we had a large Dell computer that we were using for simulations. And the same thing happened. We started getting weird.
Too much math, Spencer. Too much math. You've got to stop that.
Can you ever actually have too much math? I don't think so.
You remember Intel had that problem with one of their math chips for a while.
Yeah, they had the bad floating point, right.
Yeah.
That's right. So we got a brand new motherboard under service contract in that computer. And it was obvious when you looked at the electrolytics, they were swelled. And those were the bad caps. And the technician told me about it.
He admitted it.
Oh, yes. He said, we have a bad load of capacitors, and that's what's causing it. And when you looked at the board, it was obvious that was so.
In the discovery of these documents.
Is this, I'm sorry. Sorry to interrupt. No, go ahead. Is this an ongoing problem?
No.
Or is it something that happened, they fixed it, and now their big problem is they're going to have to replace a bunch of motherboards?
They fixed it. They said if you had the bad capacitors, the chances of it failing were 97%. The problem is, and this is the smoking gun that's coming out now with Discovery, is that Dell employees went out of their way to conceal it. In one email exchange, quoting the New York Times, between Dell customer support employees concerning computers at a law firm, a Dell worker says, quote, "We need to avoid all language indicating the boards were bad or had issues per our discussion this morning." Another quote, "Don't bring this to the customer's attention proactively." Another quote, "Emphasize uncertainty." That's why I was curious, Spencer, whether they told you what was wrong. So they admitted it.
Oh, the technician absolutely admitted it. But if you looked at the motherboard and you were an engineer, you couldn't miss it. It was just, you wanted to get under the table before they exploded. That's how bloated they were.
The thing that's interesting is that this has been a known vulnerability and problem that's been ongoing for like a decade.
It's been longer than that, Steve. We had those problems with S100 bus boards.
Well, in this case, I think what's happened is that, you know, no offense made to China, but we have very, very inexpensive Chinese manufacturers who are producing something which is unfortunately not solid state. The electrolytic capacitors on motherboards and power supplies are arguably, you know, liquid state because they have a dielectric in them in order to make them go, which can dry out over time, or in some cases it can get punched through, and so the capacitor starts to heat up and then, you know, pushes this dielectric out of itself. So unlike resistors and chips, which are like the other components on the motherboard, which really are sort of solid state, capacitors are not so much that. And the quality of manufacturer, when you really squeeze the price out of them, this is sort of a consequence of that.
Yeah, and that has been true since ham radio days in the 1940s, for heaven's sake.
So just bad manufacturing.
You bought quality items for when you were building your stuff back in those days. You always paid attention to the capacitors because those were the ones that were most likely to fail.
Right.
Well, there's a $40 million lawsuit now from a North Carolina Internet Services company. They say that Dell tried to hide the problem. There's also a risk because these capacitors could also burst into flame. You could have a not merely bad math calculations. You could have a serious problem.
Did any of them burst into flame? Did anybody get hurt? Or is this just some lawyers who have found a way?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know, Jerry.
These are all pretty low voltage. Normally, the symptom of this is just the machine locking up. It just, you know, it freezes. And
the machine doesn't work, and they replace the motherboards, right?
Sometimes
on the dongle rather than it was a bad capacitor, but they still replace the motherboard. Is that not correct?
Sometimes with the bad capacitors on the new motherboard as well, yeah.
Yeah. If you've got a bad supplier, you're going to have bad capacitors.
You know, that's a good question. 11.8 million computers were shipped with these bad capacitors.
Ooh. And these computers have like 15 or 20 of these capacitors on the motherboard. Yeah. It's pretty
For the most part, Optiplexes, again, from 2003 to 2005.
Well, it's pretty likely the machine was going to fail if it had that bad lot in it.
Oh, yes. They say 97% chance the machine would fail.
Sooner or later.
They replaced them all as soon as somebody complained.
The issue is that Dell is, you know, had an active policy, not, according to these documents, had an active policy not to say that's what was wrong.
Not to take
responsibility. Of course they do. Apple has an active policy not to admit anything.
So you're just saying it's endemic, huh? It's in the nature of business.
I'm saying that it's the normal way people do business, for heaven's sake, and it is the normal way that lawyers try to get themselves rich, because you can make certain that the client is never going to get a dime out of this class action suit. The client will get a coupon worth a new capacitor someday.
Well, now we have these alleged lawsuits that are filed. Actually, they're not alleged. There are several lawsuits that were filed against Apple with respect to iPhone 4 antenna. And they're saying that the antenna was defective and Apple knew it. And You know, what do you have to say about that? I mean, the antenna was a design choice.
The only thing that could happen, I think, would be if the lawsuits don't get just dismissed out of hand, through this process of discovery, we would get access to documents. And it would be interesting to know what Apple knew and when they knew it, if anything. I think that's probably unlikely.
But it ain't my business. My business is to use Apple products until I don't like them, and then I'll go buy something else.
And that is Steve Jobs' defense. In fact, that's what it said in that press release is, if, you know, we'll give you 30 days to decide you want something else, and if you want something else, go buy it.
Pioneers are the ones with the arrows in their backs, for heaven's sake. I mean, I've been doing that for 40 years. I've been using equipment, some of which wasn't in. I had two of those Intel.
Well, Jerry,
thing with the bad chips.
I think
in
that's why you're sort of careful when you sit down, right, Jerry?
Wouldn't you agree, though, Jerry, that the right thing for a company to do would be to acknowledge the problem and fix it, as opposed to stonewall, deny, put it off as long as
it's the right thing to do. Now, tell me who does it.
Well, apparently not Dell or Apple.
Who else?
I don't know. That's
name
a good question.
Somebody who does what you think is the right thing.
I can name one, but it's not a technology company.
Who's that?
L.L. Bean.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah.
If you have
a
problem with your waterproof
boots. And Eddie Bauer used to be. It's no longer the case. But at one time, Eddie Bauer's stuff was always guaranteed forever. If you didn't like something, you brought it back 20 years later. I didn't like this jacket very much. Oh, all right.
I don't know if you've seen these.
Notice they went out of. They didn't exactly go out of business. But Eddie Bauer.
They're not
no
flourishing.
Longer owns Eddie Bauer.
I got to warn you. There's a little bit of profanity in the video that I'm about to play. This is a very funny video. Everybody in our studio audience is now turning to face the screen and listening carefully. The very funny video made by. A Best Buy, I believe a Best Buy employee.
Right, Best Buy.
About the iPhone, the typical iPhone customer. I'll just play a little bit of this. We'll bloop out in the download, we'll bloop out the profanity. But for those of you watching live, just cover your shell-like ears here.
Welcome to Phone Mart. How may I help you?
iPhone 4. Where is the iPhone 4? I need an iPhone 4.
Oh, I'm very sorry, but we are currently sold out. However, we did finally get some more HTC Evos in.
What? What is that? Is it an iPhone?
No, it is that 4G phone on Sprint.
If it's not an iPhone, why would I want it?
Well, it's similar to an iPhone, but has a bigger screen.
I don't care.
The internet speeds are around 3 times faster.
I don't care.
It has a higher resolution camera on both the front and the back.
I don't care.
And it doesn't require you to be on Wi-Fi to use video chat.
I don't care.
Its battery is replaceable, as is the memory card.
I don't care.
It is highly customizable, everything from the widgets to the icons, the fonts, and even has video wallpaper.
I don't care.
The monthly bill is cheaper.
I don't care.
It prints money.
I don't care.
It can grant up to 3 wishes, even if one of those wishes is for an iPhone.
I don't care.
It has an app that will build you an island, and then it transforms into a jet and flies you there.
I don't care.
And it's indestructible.
I don't care about any of that.
Okay, fine. Then what the hell entices you about the iPhone 4, if you don't mind me asking?
It is an iPhone.
You do realize that doesn't mean anything. It's a brand. They could put out a brick and call it an iPhone if they wanted to.
Yes, but it's the best phone.
Can you explain how?
I can download apps to it.
Big deal.
Anyway, it goes on. It's actually totally inspired. It's brilliant, and the kid who made it is about to lose his job at Best Buy.
Yeah,
because I don't know why. I don't know what their justification is for it.
He's been suspended, and now they're trying to figure out how to make it permanent. So I don't think they know yet what the justification is either that would, you know, pass the attorneys.
Brian Maupin is
all right. Droid should hire him immediately.
Yeah, exactly. Get him a job at a Sprint store. Brian Maupin is 25-year-old Kansas City, Missourian. He's been working at the Best Buy selling mobile phones for the last 3.5 years. They suspended him indefinitely because the video, which currently has millions of views on YouTube, offended somebody at corporate. They felt, quote, it disparaged a brand they carried as well as the store itself and were fearful of stockholders and customers being turned off to Best Buy Mobile.
Did it mention Best Buy? Did the video mention Best Buy?
Not once. In fact, at the beginning, it says some, you know, random name for a phone store.
Yeah, they don't have a case. I think he may make his next couple of years' salary in the lawsuit.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know if Missouri is an at-will state. I mean, in California, they can fire him for any reason at all.
Or they ought to move him into creative services.
Libertarian like me, I think they ought to be able to fire him because they don't like his look.
Right.
That's
right. He did make, by the way, a rebuttal video. It's not as funny, but it's a video to. I don't know if this was after he got in trouble. Probably not. But I think he felt bad about the iPhone.
Welcome to the Apple Store. How may I help you today?
Can you fix my phone? I heard you have the genius geeks here. Can they fix phones?
Yes. Which iPhone do you have?
I have the HTC Evo.
Oh, I see. That's not an iPhone, though.
I read on the internet that it was just like the iPhone, but better.
I see. Well, what is wrong with the phone?
It keeps saying my app has crashed, and the battery only stays charged for 1 hour.
Well, it could be caused by Google's programming.
How do I fix it?
You throw it the fuck away, and then purchase an iPhone.
But this has more MPs than the iPhone. And
it's actually, he's quite fair to both. In two videos, he definitely gives you the pros and cons on both. So I think the guy, you're right, he's at this point, it's all good for him.
Let's just all pay him to keep making videos.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, no subscribe.
Kidding. Yeah, yeah, he needs a donor base. Talk about making money. I'm going to talk about a viral video that made the family $150,000 in merchandising and more. But before I do that, I want to make a little money myself and tell you a little bit about Audible.com. We all know Audible is the bookstore online. Jerry, you have some books on Audible, as a matter of fact.
I have lots of books on Audible, and I can tell you that they are very fair to authors. I have been getting quite reasonable royalty checks from Audible for some time now.
That's good to know.
I endorse Audible. Buy my books on Audible. They actually do a very good job.
I love them.
You've got to do your commercial, but I can tell you, they get good readers. The people who read them actually have read the book and understand something about them. I've even gotten questions on pronunciation from some of the people. And you know, when you invent aliens and alien languages, it is not always obvious how those words are to be pronounced. Like,
oh, yeah, that's the Larry Niven, the Protector book. They did a great job with it.
No, Skint's click is out of molten God's eye.
Oh, they have
it
that.
It was, in fact, Larry Niven's phrase, not mine, but it wasn't, but it's from Moten. In any event, Audible just does a very good job of reading those books. They've got most of the ones Niven and I have done, and many of mine alone are on Audible, and they're very good.
Well, as you can see, it's in my library, The Moten's God's Eye. I listened to both Lucifer's Hammer and The Motes in God's Eye, one right after the other, which is about 40 or 50 hours worth of entertainment. You can get them both absolutely free, and Jerry still gets his royalty. All you got to do is go to audible.com/twit2. You sign up for the Platinum account. That's the one I have. It's 2 books a month, which is my minimum. I know people who have multiple Platinum accounts, people with long commutes. 2 books a month is about right for me. Those first 2 books are free. You can cancel at any time, and you get to keep the books forever. But don't just stop with The Moten God's Eye or Lucifer's Hammer. There's also Star Swarm and Footfall and Oath of Fealty. I mean, there's a great Jerry Pournelle connection right there. Inferno. What's your favorite of these, Jerry? Escape from Hell?
Well, the collaborations are one. They're the only one of those that's a single one so far, but they're coming out with more from Audible later. It's Star Swarm, which is a juvenile.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So that's another thing that's great about Audible. Kids love Audible, and it's a great way, believe it or not, to get them reading. I have a friend whose daughter is a big Harry Potter fan. She's only in second grade. She's actually reading the books, which is pretty impressive. This is a very smart kid, but she loves listening to them as well. Audiobooks are a great way to introduce kids to chapter books a little ahead of time, get them reading ahead of level, and kids just love them. For long car trips, for dad and mom, too, in the car or at the gym. I listen all the time at the gym. Audible.com/twit2. Give it a try. We're Audible fanatics here at the Twit Cottage, and I know you will be too. In fact, I hear from people all the time say, I stopped listening to your show. I'm just listening to Audible now. That's okay. You're allowed. It's okay. I understand. So did you ever see the viral video, David After Dentist? I'll play a little bit of it. It's a pretty old viral video. It's kind of a... This father videotapes his kid who's just had dental surgery and is still stoned out of his gourd. He's 7 years old.
Let it go.
I didn't feel anything.
Yeah.
I feel funny.
So this video, believe it or not, they have made $150,000 off of it. Not only from Google Ads, but they sell T-shirts. Kind of an amazing story. The guy shot it on a flip camera, just, you know, intending to share it with friends, not put it publicly, but he didn't have a choice on YouTube. It had to be public. And now I should check. I didn't see what the numbers were, but millions of people have watched this video. It just shows you it's possible to make money on YouTube videos. Whoa. 62 million views.
Wow.
62 million views.
Good grief.
and so it's because there's also ads on that YouTube
there's
page?
There's ads on it. And YouTube shares some of that revenue.
Mm.
Kind of amazing that there's that much money in viral videos. I don't know if there's anything more to say about that. Rumor that Google is going to do a Google Me. We talked about it last week. Kevin Rose spread that rumor originally on Twitter. He was asked by somebody, we don't know who, to take it down. He did. Didn't matter. It was too late. And now the world seems to agree Google's going to do a Facebook clone called Google Me. Eric Schmidt was asked about it during a speech in London this week. His denial is a non-denial denial. He said, that would be a product announcement, and I won't say.
Well, I love Jerry's Facebook page.
What's your Facebook page, Jerry? I don't have a Facebook account, so I can't see it.
I've never seen it. My daughter had it put up, and they maintain it. And at some point, I suppose I should go look at it. But in fact, I have never seen my Facebook page. Isn't that awful?
So I probably
it's hooked right into Twitter.
I suspect it does. My daughter has was an Army intelligence officer, and she's now in publication. She's she's got a PhD in anthropology. Her thesis has changed a lot of what we knew about 5,000 years ago. So she's a pretty sharp girl, and she pretty well runs that thing. I haven't paid much attention to
her. Oh, you look good on that page.
You do. Here. Look at that sharp tuxedo. And Jerry, when you post on here, then it's your words, but your daughter's writing them? Because I see posts.
I presume that's so. She probably takes them out of my books and things.
This is.
We've never really even corresponded on it. She just said she thought that somebody ought to have one, so she's got it going, and she's done a good job with it.
It could be worse. She could name it, my dad says. And
I was just going to say, stuff from the dinner table.
Yeah, wouldn't that be wonderful?
And talk about guys made money. This was a Twitter account. The guy, he's 29 years old, lives with a 74-year-old dad who is a little outspoken, shall we say. It is now a book. It has been optioned for, is it a TV show or a movie?
Shatner is going to do a series.
William Shatner is going to be the dad. See, Jerry, there is some value to Twitter.
You're convincing me. Maybe I should go get rich on Twitter by telling people when I'm going to have a peanut butter sandwich.
Don't knock it. Don't knock it.
I have a very brief Twitter story.
Yeah.
When this first blog post I put up last week was published, I went on the Antennesis Twitter account and I tweeted just the fact that there's a new blog post, which I do every time I do a new blog post.
Right.
Yep.
And the next day, my unique visitor count, which is typically around 11 to 15 unique visitors, and I know one of them is my mom, went to 89,000 unique visitors.
And I'm one of them, by the way. First time I've been there. And you know what, Spencer? I bookmarked it, and I'm going to be coming back there. So this is good for you.
Okay, you've got me convinced. Thank you, Spencer.
You're welcome.
This has been.
I'm not sure. I'm a wordy old codger. I'm not sure I can think of anything worth saying in 128 characters.
Oh, I think you see that's what's so nice is by being limited to 140, you sort of, you know, you're not being expected to write a book every time. It's just, you know, how dry was the peanut butter?
Yeah, all of those courses I took in formal English on poetry, on odes and sonnets and that sort of thing, maybe that will help.
I think, Jerry, you should write all your tweets in the form of a sonnet.
Iambic pentameter.
It should all be an iambic pentameter. There you go. Da-da.
You know,
what is that?
I would follow Jerry.
I would follow.
He
who
bangs
wouldn't?
The drum and makes a dreadful noise. That's one.
Da-dun,
or
da-dun.
To be or not to be, that is the question. But you'll notice that question ends with a soft sound and it has 11 beats in it.
And besides, I think that tweet's already been taken.
There's a technical name for that, too. But it is an iambic pentameter as well.
I think, Jerry, this is how you make it interesting for yourself. You create this artificial structure. You say, okay, I'll tweet, but it has to be iambic pentameter or something.
There's a thought. Or maybe all of it put together will become an ode.
Be writing a sonnet there.
An ode is not a sonnet.
I'm sorry. Shocking. Shocking.
And I have to say, for me, it's great feedback, too. I learn as much from the people who follow me as I think, or more than they do from me. So it does create
some
connection.
Mine, but that's just on the mail. I mean, I don't need to tweet to do that.
Something about it. Give it a shot. I'll bet you get hooked.
Oh, man. This just cracks me up because Steve was so resistant. Steve echoed everything you've ever said, Jerry.
You know, for many years, I used to say that I wasn't the smartest guy in the world, but I had such a long enough readership that there were very few questions I couldn't get an answer to because somebody reads me, knows the answer,
and
is going to send it to me. Well, that's still the case. There is very little I can say on in my day book. I hate the word blog, but there's very little I can say in my day book that doesn't get me some answers from people who really know the subject a lot better than I do.
It might actually be more true today, Jerry, than it used to be, even.
Yeah. And I think that's kind of what happens on Twitter.
Well, you may remember that in 1980, I said that by the year 2000, everybody in Western civilization will be able to get the answer to any question that actually has an answer. I said that in 1980, and everybody said I was crazy. And, of course, I had to say Western civilization because I certainly didn't believe the Soviet Union would be gone by 2000.
Well, now, in fact, I mean, Twitter is very much global. In fact, the new Twitter statistics are that Asia tweets more than anybody.
Yeah, but China does censor the Internet and by a lot.
It does. You can't tweet from China. I found that out when I was in China. One last story, and then we'll move on. And I want to pose this question to you gray hairs because I cannot. I think this is unprecedented. Microsoft announced a phone 6 weeks ago. They called it the Kin. They released it. And they have canceled it in 6 weeks. And I cannot think of another time that Microsoft or anybody else could have killed a product this fast.
I'm so impressed by the speed.
The fastest failure in I can think of. 6 weeks from announcement to you can't buy it anymore.
It took them longer to kill their stupid soundboard than that.
That's right. That was an early Microsoft flop.
In that phone, in fact, the antenna was your ear. You had to hook a wire to your ear.
What?
No, it's true. And if you hook one wire to each ear, it actually was a smart
antenna. He's teasing
us.
He's teasing us now. I can tell he's teasing us. It is a funny looking phone. It's a little tiny little pebble of a phone. I don't know where you would put the antenna in this thing because there's nowhere you cannot hold it. I mean, you have to hold it in your hand.
That is tiny.
If this phone doesn't have an antenna problem, then Apple's got a PR problem.
Well, the evidence is that it disappeared in 6 weeks.
Yeah, maybe.
Isn't it?
You can buy it. This is the Amazon page for the Kin 1. The list price, $349. The sale price, one penny.
Yeah, this just shows how clueless Microsoft is.
What went wrong?
That they could think that they were just envious of everybody else doing it right. And they said, well, we're Microsoft, so we're just going to do one, too. And, you know, they Jerry knows that Microsoft doesn't create things for a market. They just force what they have to fit into where the market has gone. It's like they didn't have an internet network capable OS, so they just stuck it on the internet, you know, stuck Windows on the internet, and then we had years of security problems. When phones started getting smart, they didn't have a smartphone OS, so they just tried to sort of squeeze Windows down, and we know how well that worked.
Well, I am not as anti-Microsoft as you seem to be, as you historically have been, but I am hardly one of their toadies either.
What do you do if you're Microsoft now, where you're struggling? You're just struggling to keep up.
I don't think they have. I think that Bill Gates always ran scared, you know. I mean, I knew Bill back when he was actually running the company. I used to could win bets from people by saying I could get Bill Gates on the telephone. And the way you do it is you just dial the Microsoft switchboard number at night. He'd be the only one there.
He'd
answer the phone.
Those days are long gone, Jerry.
Those are long gone, but he ran scared and he paid attention. There isn't anybody doing that now.
Right.
Bill understood that his company was number one for as long as he could keep it there. And he had some fiefdoms that worked. The office fiefdom was run very well by, we both all know his name. He bought a bowling alley after he retired. Anyway, but it isn't the same Microsoft anymore, and it's trying to be run by different crews, and they don't have the same. They're not as scared, and they're not as hungry. I don't know that they can survive the new wave.
You know,
it might be time for them to be done.
The interesting thing, and Paul Theroux, if you were here, would point this out. He's their Windows Weekly host and a really great guy. And Microsoft's revenue is still huge. You know, you talk about the market cap that Apple beat Microsoft's market cap. But there's no question that Microsoft is still extraordinarily profitable, a massive company. I guess the question is the trend in Microsoft's favor or not? In other words, clearly Microsoft is still doing very well.
So they have a ton of inertia, and I would have to agree that the trend is not in their favor. When you look at open source in the long term, you look at all of this next generation portability. I mean, you know, Jerry is jumping up and down and carrying an iPad around, as am I. Yeah. I mean, we're traditionally Windows people.
Microsoft said this week that 1 billion people use Microsoft Office. 1 billion people.
Yeah, and Office is pretty good. For all the people who say they don't like it, the fact is that most of the books written in this world are written on Microsoft Word.
Except, Jerry, I remember very well that you were the guy who wanted a clean screen. You didn't want Microsoft Word to write
with. I didn't want Microsoft Word for a very long time, and Bill... Was it Peters?
They took DOS away from us.
The product manager came down here and said, what would it get to cause you to use it? So I told him 3 things to put into it, and by God, they did. And at that point, I was doomed.
You had to use it. They'd done it for you. It was the Pornell feature.
You will notice that with Office 2009, with Word, you can do that Control F1 feature, and most of that ribbon goes away, and you've got what amounts to the old clean screen again.
So you use Word to write?
I use Word to write, but I use it with using that Control F1.
Right. To clean it up.
To clean it up, so there's nothing up there except what I do. Oh, yeah, I like type ahead, Leo. I like automatic word correction. I'm a sloppy typist. I type T-E-H quite a lot.
Right.
And I don't like to have to go back and correct it. I like it that it automatically corrects that. Also, I like being able to have special dictionaries because I have a lot of character names I don't want in my normal dictionary. I want one in that's specific to the work I'm working on.
Well, I guess it's not over for Microsoft, but it's certainly no longer a Microsoft era. And
that's true.
The kin is a surprising stumble for a company that's done really so well.
But wasn't it inevitable? The problem is that the hardware that is available to everybody is so much better than the software. that nobody really can keep. But there is enormous room for improvement in everything we do.
Let me say this again, because I think it's really important what you just said. The hardware available to us today is better than the software.
By a lot.
Why is that?
Because
isn't hardware hard? Isn't hardware hard? Hardware harder?
Moore's law doesn't scale for software. That takes smart people, and we don't have any way of doing that. And until we get the singularity where you have computers designing themselves, if that ever happens, you know, AI and you get assisted evolution rather than Mendelian evolution and so forth, Lamarckian evolution, then maybe software will begin to catch up. But the hardware is going to get better again.
And the
look
other
at
thing
what
is
Intel's
that,
got in the queue, for heaven's sake, and we can't use the capacity of the hardware we have.
The other thing is that hardware has to be correct, and software, sadly, doesn't have to be correct. It can be sort of approximate, and the system appears to work. But if the hardware is not correct, it doesn't go at all.
Gates built Microsoft. Everybody, you know, the OS 2 Windows war was very instructive. IBM was a company that prided itself on doing it right. And they weren't going to put things out there until it was really done well.
Yep.
Meanwhile, Gates would ship it tomorrow because it doesn't matter how bad it works on the equipment people have now. The next generation of equipment, it's going to work very well. And he was out. He bet. He essentially bet everything he had on Moore's Law, and he won. But that was Gates, and he was willing to take chances like that.
I think Microsoft needs an injection of new blood, young engineers who are given the freedom and the cash to go out and design something that will have to be better than what Apple can offer.
Sure, and they wanted them for a very long time, but the trouble is Google got them all.
Google got all the brains.
One of the things that impresses me about Apple, which also upsets people about Apple, is that Apple is willing to obsolete their stuff very quickly. I mean, it upsets people when a new version of the phone comes out after, you know, 2 days before they bought the prior version. And one thing that happens when companies get big like Microsoft is they have so much investment in their own existing product line that they cannot obsolete it. They have to simply creep it forward very slowly.
Well, Gates wouldn't have put it that way. I know this. I mean, he's told me himself. He felt an obligation to people who had bought previous generations of the stuff that they wouldn't just be suddenly left in the lurch. And his choice was to make a lot of concessions to legacy. Apple doesn't have to do that, and didn't. As a result was, until not very long ago, Apple had, 2% market share?
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, Jerry, I'm sitting here looking at, I'm not typing into it right now, but I'm still in a DOS-based text editor for writing my code.
But what's interesting is that both of you are using iPads mm-hmm. and iPhone. Well, not iPhone for you, Steve, but...
Well, and yeah. I'm on here on a
Mac.
A MacBook Pro, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So what does that tell us?
Tells us I like them both. It tells us that the operating system is becoming irrelevant. No user gives a damn what operating system he's using. What he wants is the dang machine to do what he wants it to do.
Yeah.
What about Google's Chromium OS? Google's moving towards an OS that's in the cloud. Do you think that's a... reasonable? That kind of is the ultimate response to that.
It wouldn't be for me.
Because you don't want to live in the cloud.
Twitter, Gary. Twitter.
I don't want copies of my novel out there where somebody else can get at them if they know how.
Oh, that's interesting. You're afraid of the security issues.
It's not just security. It's just privacy. And also, I've had enough interruptions in my high-speed service, especially since I'm dependent on AT&T for some of it, that I want to make dang sure that anything I do can be done with stuff I have here. And why in the world should I have, sitting here, I'm talking to you on the equivalent of what would have been considered a supercomputer in 1990, why in the world should I want to go out to do the way I used a supercomputer back in 1990? In 1990, I used to have to go to the University of Illinois to get the solution to some tensor, which I don't do anymore, but I did in those days. I can do all of that stuff on my machine here. Why would I want to go back to having to use the web to do things, which I thought was wonderful that I finally got a machine to do it here?
Well, what about the notion that you've got a bunch of devices and having them all say the same thing is valuable? So it makes sense if, Jerry, you got one computer, a desktop computer, but now I got an iPhone, iPad, laptop, desktop. Shouldn't they all have access to the same data, the same information, the same?
Don't yours? Mine do.
It's thanks to the cloud, right?
No, I network right here.
Oh, you do your own network?
I have a perfectly good network here.
That's because you don't get out of the house much.
Every one of my machines is available to every other man of my machine.
What happens when you hit the road?
When I hit the road, I carry terabytes of information with me when I hit the road. Don't you?
No.
No.
I have it all in the cloud.
I think it's clear that the future is for us to carry viewers and that we'll be connected, amazingly enough. I mean, I the fact that this is really happening as an old gray hair just
it does surprise
amazes me.
Because I had the same objection, Jerry.
That's what I described in Moat and God's Eye, you know.
Yes.
The machine that they were carrying, the pocket computer they were carrying, really had very little internal storage.
Right.
It connected what we would call a desktop now in the room they were in, and that connected to the ship's main library.
But here's the good news. You don't have to make the choice. You can do both.
Yeah.
So you get what you want.
Oh, to that extent, I do. But I don't really want there was a proposal in the Congress last week that the president should have a big red button that allows him to shut down the internet whenever he thinks that there's a national security reason to do so. Do you remember that?
Uh-oh. Yeah, Steve and I talked about this, the so-called kill switch.
The big kill switch for the president. Now, when that happens, Leo, where are you?
Well, now, Steve, you didn't think it really was a kill switch.
We'll never know where Leo is because he won't be able to tweet his location.
You'll have no idea where I am, exactly.
Yeah. I'll be right here in chaos manner. But
I have no physical locus, Jerry. I am everywhere. Wow. Unfortunately,
virtually,
there are limits, and we've run against the limit called time. I wish I had a day for this show, but Jerry, we'll just have to get you and Steve back. And Spencer, you too. This has been a lot of fun. You guys are sometimes the gray hairs have some perspective that the young guys don't have, and that's, I think, often much more interesting.
Yeah, the young guys think things were always connected,
right.
We remember when the idea of connecting things was like, wait a minute, how can you have all these computers networked together? You
exactly.
can't do that.
Exactly. Jerry Pournelle is the author of so many great books, Moat in God's Eye, Lucifer's Hammer. I always want to call it Dante's Inferno for some reason.
Inferno is the name of the book that Niven and I wrote, and Escape from Hell is its sequel. And they are essentially Dante's geography and Vatican II theology.
Jerry, let's pick a Twitter handle and create a Twitter account for you before we get off the air. What do you want to call yourself on Twitter?
Big Red Button.
Twitter. What do I want to call myself on Twitter?
I guess probably the best would be, Steve learned this, the best is something short, but your name is always good, right?
Chaos Manor?
Oh, Chaos Manor. Now, there's a good...
Beautiful.
There's a good handle.
Let's cross our fingers.
Well, I'm not going to sign up for you, Jerry. I want you to sign up for yourself.
I'll have to figure out how, but I can do that.
I'm sure you can figure that out.
Twitter.com.
And JerryPournelle.com is the place to go to read Jerry's postings, his musings. Do donate. Take $2 from Leo and give it to Jerry instead. He's certainly earned it. We all are here because of Jerry Pournelle. Jerry, it's great to have you here.
Thank you.
Steve Gibson is the man at GRC.com. That's where you can get SpinRight and all his other wonderful free security programs. And, of course, let's not forget Security Now, the greatest podcast on security. GRC.com/SecurityNow for that. Jerry, Steve, thank you for being here. We'll see
it's
you on
a pleasure. And Jerry, great to be with you on the show.
Oh, man, it's so fun. And Spencer, you've been great to sit here while these old cats have been talking.
Oh, I've been enjoying it every minute.
Spencer Webb is the man in charge at AntennaSys.com. He is not looking for a job, Apple, but you know where to find him. AntennaSys.com. Thank you for joining us and giving us the straight story on the antenna situation with the iPhone. Happy to help. Thank you all for being here. We do this show normally, and we're a little off today. We do this show normally on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern time, 2200 UTC. We switched it over to Saturday because of the holiday. I hope you have a wonderful Independence Day, 4th of July. Anything patriotic you'd like to say, Jerry, before we sign off?
Nope. God bless the legions.
And with that, another twit is in the can. Take care.
Thanks, Leo. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. What a great show.